the most trusted and longest-running sports talk show in Tennessee. From the Budweiser studios of Cumulus Broadcasting, this is Sports Talk with John Wilkerson and Jimmy Hines on Sports Radio WNML.
Number four, Sports Talk begins with Jimmy Hyams. I'm John Wilkerson. Coming up later this hour, we look forward to being joined by SEC replay official Gerald Hodges. And we've got coming up in mere moments your chance to win with a Sports Fix at six. But we say congratulations to Travis, as he was the winner of a Mark Nelson Denim gift card for hearing the word of the day. And so he heard it from game day, heard the cue to call, called in, and was our winner. So congratulations to Travis, as he is the winner today of that gift card for Mark Nelson Denim. Again, coming up after Sports Talk, Tennessee Sports Night from 7 to 7:30, Football Futures with Josh Ward from 7:30 to 8, and then Big Orange Hotline, all coming your way on 99.1 The Sports Animal. Right now, it's your chance to win. It's the Sports Fix at 6.
John, we're giving away a $25 gift card to Edwin Watts Golf. Now, Edwin Watts Golf's been offering golfers top-line golf equipment at the lowest prices and with the best service since 1968, located in Turkey Creek. $25 gift card to Edwin Watts Golf if you can answer this trivia question. All right, here we go. There are three college football coaches that have the most wins at two different schools. Name those three coaches. Three college football coaches have the most all-time wins at two different schools. Name those coaches. John, each of them has a tie to this league, SEC.
656-9900, 656-9900. Star 990 is free for AT&T and U.S. Cellular customers. The toll-free number, 1-866-656-9900. Let's start with Tom. Hello, Tom. How are you?
Hey, guys, I just want to make sure I heard the question right. It's the all-time at two separate schools or just the all-time that have coached at two schools?
The all-time most wins at two different schools.
Okay. That's a good question. All right, I guess I'll go with Nick Saban. Maybe James Franklin, and I'm just kind of because I remember how well he did. I don't remember how well he did at his other, but Bobby Bowden.
Well, we didn't get any on that one, Tom. It's a tough question, but thanks for trying.
We sure do appreciate it, Tom. Have a great night. Let's go next to Mark. Hello, Mark.
Hey, guys. How are y'all tonight?
Fine. And yourself?
Doing just fine. By the way, John, when your Broncos won, you left my Bengals out. We're still winless, so be. And I don't think we play Miami this year, but anyway. So I'm going to go with Steve Spurrier, because I think with South Carolina and Florida.
Good start.
Bear Bryant, because all those at Alabama, he was at Kentucky before then.
Better start.
And oh, wow. All right, you've already said it's not Nick Saban. Golly. I do not have a third answer. Jimbo Fisher?
No, it's not Fisher.
Okay.
But you got, that was a good start. Got two out of three.
Thanks. All right.
Sure do appreciate it, Mark. Let's go next to Eric, who joins us. Hello, Eric.
Hello.
Hi.
Bill Bryant, Steve Spurrier, and Gary Pinkle.
There you go, Gary Pinkle. Nice job, Eric. Yeah, that is correct. So, Bear Bryant, all-time leader at Kentucky and Alabama. Steve Spurrier, Florida and South Carolina. I was watching that game, the Florida-South Carolina game, when they popped that up there. Gary Pinkle at Missouri and Toledo. How about that?
Yeah.
So, those are the three coaches who have the most wins all-time at two different schools. Eric, you've won a $25 gift card to Edwin Watts Golf. We're going to put you on hold and get that prize to you. Good job.
Eric, we sure do appreciate it. Thanks to everyone who called in, and congratulations to Eric for winning our Sports Fix at 6. Up next, we'll be joined by Gerald Hodges, SEC replay official, to join us, 656-9900. 656-9900 puts you on Sports Talk.
The station where winners listen and listeners win. 99.1, The Sports Animal.
In mere moments, we'll talk with SEC replay official Gerald Hodges. First, though, Brad wants to see if he can score a Ford as he joins us. Brad, how are you?
Pretty good, guys. How are you?
Doing quite well. So here's your opportunity. Tennessee at home, 4 o'clock kick against South Carolina. We certainly appreciate your listening, and congratulations on getting through. How do you see it playing out Saturday?
Thank you. Well, guys, I'm being a little pessimistic this week, so I am going to go with Tennessee 17 because I just feel like they got the defense going, and South Carolina 28.
So you take South Carolina to win 28-17.
You got it.
All right. Well, Brad, sure to appreciate, again, your listening. Congratulations on getting through, and good luck with the drawing on Friday.
Thanks, sir. Good luck.
All right. Sure to appreciate you. Here's how it works. We'll take scores throughout the week. They all go into a hat on Friday, a random drawing. If Brad is the one that's selected and South Carolina defeats Tennessee 28-7 as he predicts, he would score a brand new Ford F-150 from Ted Russell Ford valued at about $45,000. Listen for your next opportunity as that will come tomorrow morning on the starting lineup between 6 and 9. It's your chance to score a Ford with Ted Russell Ford. And Jimmy, now it's time to say hello to Gerald Hodges. As if you have a question or comment about the rule book, 656-9900, 656-9900. Gerald's appearance brought to you by A.G. Hines Company, providing building materials since anyone can remember.
Gerald, how you doing?
Doing well.
Well, there weren't any controversy calls over the weekend, so but we'll start
asking
good.
You a couple of questions. That's always good, sure.
I do want to ask you about a few things. One is there was a targeting call against Tennessee during the course of the game. It was against the linebacker, Daniel Batuli, led with a helmet. They called targeting. I don't think many people disagree with it, but the question came up, what is he supposed to do? So I do want to ask you this question. Are there any extenuating circumstances in which there's head-to-head contact between an offensive player and a defensive player, helmet-to-helmet, where you would not call targeting?
Jimmy, there is, and there are several examples. Last year there was a play, and you had a receiver and a defender going up for the ball. Both have equal rights to the ball as a pass, and they were both vertical, and they had a horrendous collision, and both helmets hit, and but neither player was, you know, attacking the other one. They were both going for the face. I don't know if they even saw each other. You know, it was one of those collisions in this, you know, so you can have that. You can have one with a runner. If, you know, as long as it's not, you know, crown of the helmet attacking, you know, the runner. You have a runner going through the line, and you have a linebacker or a defender, you know, trying to tackle him. And like I said, unless they lower their head, you know, which there again, that's to protect the tackler as much as anybody. So if it's not a just an absolute crown of the helmet, you know, attack into the runner, then you can have some contact helmet to helmet that would not be targeted.
What if a running back running in the middle of the line lowers his head trying to get a third and one, and he goes helmet to helmet with the linebacker? Is there a chance that that would not be targeting, or does that depend on whether it's crown of the helmet?
It could be. It really could. Of course, there again, they want them to teach the tacklers to keep their head up.
To see what you hit.
Mm-hmm. And if, you know, if they can get to the side, you know, a little bit to the side where it's not head on, then, you know, that probably would not be called targeting. Remember, they changed the rule this year, where last year they wanted just to err on side of safety, which we still do, but we had the option of letting a play stand.
Mm-hmm.
And so in that case, you know, there were some that were, you know, what you would call a 50-50 call, may have been targeting, may not. So this year they've taken that option out. It has to be, you know, absolutely, you know, certain that it is targeting. So there've been a few less targeting calls this year for that reason. It took that third option out.
There was a particular play in the Tennessee-Alabama game in which there was maybe I heard it wrong, but I'll try to explain this to you. So an Alabama player comes in, he hits the Tennessee quarterback. The quarterback falls back. He hits his head against the offensive lineman, and he has a concussion. So on this particular play, the referee, they throw a flag, and I thought they said personal foul. Maybe they said roughness, but I thought they said personal foul. And then it went to the replay booth for potential targeting. The replay booth said no targeting on the play. Can the replay booth say, however, it was roughing the passer, or does the official on the field have to call roughing the passer or personal foul?
That's correct. They have to. The call would need to be personal foul with targeting, roughing the passer with targeting. We can only review the targeting aspect of it. So if they call personal foul with targeting or roughing the passer with targeting, then we look at the targeting, and if we deem it's not targeting, then we would take the targeting off, and then they would enforce the 15-yard penalty for the personal foul or roughing the passer.
Okay, let me ask you this one. Also, this occurred in the course of the Tennessee-Alabama game. So Tennessee has the ball on the Alabama 5-yard line, and Tennessee comes out in the Wildcat, and it surprises Alabama, but the officials shut it down. They stop the play, and then they go over and, I guess, explain to the coaches what happened. So in what situations would the officials shut down a play before the snap? There was no substitution on this particular play. So would it be a clock error possibly? Is that something that would lead to that?
It could be a play. You know, I don't know what, you know, they should, you know, what happened, but the instances, it could be if the play clock were started too soon or something of that nature, that they would want to reset the play clock, then, you know, they could stop it and pump, you know, you've seen the signal, pump the play clock back up to give the offense the full benefit of their 25 seconds or 40, you know, whichever. But that could be some malfunction with the chains, some equipment on the sidelines.
This occurred after a penalty. Could it potentially be that the officials were second-guessing themselves on the spot for a pass interference? Could it be the spot of the ball where they're not sure if they got the spot right? Would you shut it down there?
If they could. And sometimes you'll see that just in the course of a running play, and they'll put the ball down, and, you know, it doesn't happen often, but they could misspot the ball, and the guy on the sideline could say, hey, it needs to be up a yard or back a yard for whatever reason. And to re-spot the ball, that's a possibility also.
Can the replay official buzz down and say, hey, you misspotted this ball by a foot or a yard or so? Or is that uncommon unless it has to do with a first down?
It would be more or less during a first down or you know, really critical spot. But a foot or so, probably not. Probably not going to get involved in it, but, you know, where in they use the term egregious, and, you know, middle of the field, if it's a yard or two, we may not look at it. It's inside the five and it's a yard, that's a big difference. That's 20%. So it just depends on the game situations.
Let's get a call from James. You're on Sports Talk. Hello, James.
How you doing?
Doing well. How are you?
Okay. I got a question for Mr. Hodges. The quarterback for Tennessee's had two concussions in the last two games, and I don't know who will make the decision or whether he'll play or not. But my question is, can a referee, after observing a player on the field, just tell the coaching staff he cannot play?
Well, the way that would work, James, of course, in the SEC, for the last several years, we have a medical observer in the replay booth. He has his own video screen, and he is there as kind of a second line of defense. The team trainers, doctors are attuned to things like that. But And typically what would happen, the medical observers would, they would just tell the replay officials, we need to stop this game and get player number so-and-so out of the game to be evaluated by the team doctors.
What would they be looking for in a scenario like with the Tennessee quarterback? Would they be looking for certain things?
Well, a couple things, and of course, you know, any official that sees a player obviously in, you know, physical distress or, has a real stare look, and we did that before we had medical observers, but falling down or, you know, just walking erratically or, you know, just kind of things like that where they'd have a lick. But take them out and take a look at them. But now that they have the medical observers and then the team doctors there, but that's what they're there for. But any official that saw a player that's obviously, you know, badly injured or whatever, we'd definitely stop the game and then get medical attention to them.
Okay, Mr. Hodges, thank you very much.
Yes, sir. Thank you.
Appreciate it, James. We'll get a break. We've got more coming your way. To join us, 656-9900, 656-9900. Gerald's Appearance brought to you by A.G. Hines Company, providing building materials since anyone can remember. This is Sports Talk on 99.1, The Sports Animal.
We work all day under a neon Budweiser sign. Yeah, it's a really cool thing. From the Budweiser studios of Cumulus Broadcasting, we are Sports Radio WNML.
Sports Talk continues with Jimmy Himes. I'm John Wilkerson. Our guest, SEC replay official Gerald Hodges. Let's go to the phones and check in with Don. Hello, Don.
Hey, guys.
Hey.
I appreciate you taking my call. And for Mr. Hodges, I got a question and a comment.
Don, you sound like you have a cold.
No, I'm sorry. I don't. It's just me. The question you just were discussing a while ago about spotting the ball, and you said that, you know, if it's inside the five, you know, that's exactly what happened in late in the third quarter of that football game, or fourth quarter. Tennessee had the ball at the 2-yard line, ran a play for no gain, and they spotted it at the 3. And nobody observed it or whatever, and I believe that would be one of those cases you said that probably should have been.
Well, there again, Don, that, you know, the officials on the field decide where the ball is when the runner is down. So, you know, and of course, I didn't see the play. I was driving back and forth, but I've just seen in general, you know, the spots are, and of course they are in any game, but they're more critical inside the 10 and the 5 than, you know, out in the middle of the field. So, I don't know what the situation is. It's just a judgment call as to where the ball was when the runner was down.
Don, here's what I saw. So it was a Wildcat play to Jordan, right? So when I watched it, Jordan got hit on the 3, spun around, and went down on the 2, my opinion. So then they cut off, and they're showing all this other stuff. Then when they come back to it, they got a black line on the 3-yard line. I'm like, wait a minute. So I went back and replayed it because I thought, did I miss that far? And he was down on the 2. Now, I will tell you this. The black line was not completely accurate. So in my opinion, they put the ball on the 2.5, or they missed it by about 1.5 or 2 feet, in my opinion. Because I thought the ball was squarely on the 2, and when they came back, it wasn't quite touching the 3-yard line, but it was close. I thought it was an error in the spot. But again, that's my opinion on where the ball was spotted. They didn't show the referees going up and with their left foot or whatever and spotting it and saying, okay, this is where. They didn't show that. They just came back and showed where the ball was. I thought it was a missed spot by 1.5 to 2 feet, my opinion.
Yeah. Well, I think I speak for a lot of folks in South Carolina and Tennessee. It's not just like because we just, you've asked Gerald about and the one we're just now discussing. It's the preponderance of calls that seem to be game-changing calls all going to the ranked teams. versus the non-ranked teams. You know, I'd like to see both crews suspended.
You'd like to see both crews suspended, okay?
Yeah.
All right.
Either incompetence or favoritism toward the ranked teams.
Okay. Gerald, I want to ask you this. A lot of people do not feel that SEC officials are held accountable. How are they held accountable? Because at the end of the year, I know that Steve Shaw, the coordinator of officials, will say we did not retain some officials. That, to me, would be holding them accountable, right?
Right.
So
they are graded every game, every call, and they have an evaluation at the end of the year, and there are occasions where people are not invited back.
Mm-hmm.
How often or does it happen that you could have, for instance, you've got a crew of seven and six guys are performing and grading well, but there's a member of the crew that is not keeping up in terms of what his evaluations are? Will you ever see substitutions and or temporary suspensions, anything like that as a season plays out?
Could. That is, that's totally, up to the conference office.
Mm-hmm.
That is a possibility. They are graded individually. The crew gets a grade,
mm-hmm.
but then also you're graded individually, and then you're compared against everyone else at your position, I guess, mm-hmm. is the best way to put it.
Don, we appreciate it. Let's go next to Michael. You're on Sports Talk. Hello, Michael.
Hello, Steve. I mean, John, sorry about that.
It's all right.
What I wanted to ask is, okay, in officiating games like conference games or non-conference games, when a team, like in one game, I won't mention the two schools, one was playing hurry-up football, and the other one was a coward and had a guy to drop down like he was hurt, to stop the play, pretended to be hurt. What is the rule on that? Are they allowed to do that?
Well, Michael, in the rule book, there's very strong wording about that. It's an unsportsmanlike, act. It's not penalizable, but they strongly discourage, faking an injury or, there's several other things in the rule book about that. From an official standpoint, though, when we see a player go down, we have no option other than stopping the clock to get them to come out and attend to him.
Right.
Doing that on purpose is frowned upon, from the NCAA on down.
So,
well,
tell
I know
me this.
A team that did that when Georgia and Notre Dame was playing. When Georgia would get the hurrying up, get the moving fast, Notre Dame would would pretend like a player was hurt, and I think that's sissy.
I thought you weren't going to call names.
Well, I decided to do that.
Called an audible, did you?
Oh,
nothing wrong with that. I was just noting a change in your presentation. That's all. Tell me this. Now, when you see, for instance, Tennessee encountered that in a game. It was, Bowling Green, wasn't it, Jimmy? The Tennessee were trying to go fast. Bowling Green kept having guys that would start walking off. Then they'd go down. And then they'd get up and kind of hustle off the field. When you see somebody who goes down in a heap or stays down after a play and then gets up and trots off the field, is there anything that now would take place, perhaps, with a crew chief going over to a head coach saying, Coach, you can't do this?
That would probably be the proper thing. There again, and just say, there's no penalty, unfortunately, for that, because we cannot tell. And actually, from a liability standpoint, if a player goes down, we have no options other than shut the play down. Now, on the conference level, there might be some conversation, if it continues, where you see a pattern like that. But, our hands are tied on the field.
Let's go to Jared. Hi, Jared. How are you?
Hey, I'm doing well, guys. Thanks for taking my call. My take may not be quite as hot as the last caller, but and you guys kind of did steal a little bit of my thunder a minute ago. I was wondering about we're talking about the refs being graded on every call of every game. I know that this game they're going to have quite a bit to be graded on based on just a number of penalties they threw out. But do they ever get split up as the season progresses, or is that crew together the whole season? And also, does the crew get assigned to a certain team through the year? Or I guess what I'm trying to say is make me feel better about we probably won't have to see that same crew again.
Well, the crews, the schedules come out, they are assigned by crews. Now we have, you know, we have some rules within the SEC that and also with actually the NCAA now, but there are several reasons. You cannot work a school, you know, where you played football. And if right. you played with the head coach or for a head coach of that school, and then if you have siblings or immediate family attending that school. And we've had some officials, you know, of course, obviously a lot of us went to SEC schools. So if we had children at that school, then we would not work them, and they would not schedule them that school until, you know, the relative, I guess, simplest, quicker way to say it, graduates and moves on.
Okay. But would we see the same crew we saw Saturday at another game potentially this year? Or I guess that's all said at the beginning of the season, isn't it?
The schedules come out now, you know, we get them about 4 weeks in advance. The other thing is we typically do not see a school more than twice in the season.
Okay.
So, and that all plays into where you have eight officials on a crew, you could potentially have eight schools that school can't work. So they will switch, you know, individuals in and out of a crew because of conflicts of that reason.
Mm-hmm. Okay, just one more little thing.
Sure.
You're saying they get graded on every call. What about, how do they grade you on something that is, I guess, a potential non-call?
Well, there again, they have a grading system. We have observers at every game also. And then, of course, you know, we have the game films that come in, you know, usually by Sunday afternoon of every week. So we have an actual former official there in the press box, and he will do a post game meeting with the crew, and we'll go over, you know, any glaring plays or, you know, good plays, bad plays. But then we have a film grader, and some of our film graders will spend 6 to 8 hours grading a game film. So you have the average game 175 plays, and you have eight officials. So you multiply that by eight. My math's not that good right off, but that's a lot of opportunities and plays that they look at. So
yeah, I can see that.
Yeah, and so they compile a score overall for the crew, and then a score individually for the official, and they grade correct calls, incorrect calls, no calls. You know, so there's several different categories on the play, and then they come up with a grade for the individual and for the crew.
Cool. Awesome. Well, that's a bunch of great information. I really appreciate you guys taking my call.
Yes, sir. Thank you.
Listen to you guys some more.
All right.
Thank you, Jared. Have a great week. We sure do appreciate it. We'll get a break. Coming up, a final segment to today's edition of Sports Talk, a final segment with SEC replay official Gerald Hodges. And Gerald's appearance brought to you by A.G. Hines Company, providing building materials since anyone can remember.
Not so much our job as it is our obsession. 99.1, the sports animal.
Final segment to today's edition of Sports Talk with Jimmy Himes. I'm John Wilkerson. Our guest, SEC replay official Gerald Hodges. Let's see. We go back now to Ron, who's up next. Hello, Ron.
Hey, good evening, Jimmy, John, Gerald. How are y'all tonight?
Doing well. How are you?
Good, Ron. How are you?
good. Yeah, I've been listening to your show a lot today, and a lot of people talking about how the better teams seem to get the calls and all. Kind of took me back to the 80s when I was younger, and I was and still am a North Carolina Tar Heel fan. And basketball, Dean Smith, I remember the media and my friends and people who had in North Carolina would always say, well, they shoot more free throws and they get all the calls. Well, that's because of that their teams were better. They were better coached. They were where they were supposed to be. And, of course, basketball is a different animal than football because you got to foul to get the ball back. But my question to you is, Gerald, do you think that that has anything to do with it in today's college football, that maybe the teams that are better or better coached, have better athletes, don't have to hold, don't have to pass interfere, and they're not really getting the calls and there's no conspiracy theory. They're just better athletes, basically.
Well, Ron, I'm glad you brought up the basketball because I officiated basketball for 20 years, and that's true in any, well, especially, you know, football and basketball where you have actually contact. Baseball is a little different, but a team that's bigger, stronger, faster is going to typically play better.
Alabama, Ohio State, all the teams that are in the top five, basically Georgia. So it's not, in my opinion, it's not really they get the calls. It's they're better coached, actually, or better athletes and don't have to, not to say cheat, but you know what I'm saying.
I'd say that's a general rule that that's true, but there are also plenty of teams that benefit from a friendly whistle.
Yeah, Duke. In basketball.
No, oh, don't get me started. Don't get me started.
See, there you go. You agree.
The evil empire.
Yeah.
Don't get me started. Yeah, right. Billy Packer mows Krzyzewski's yard. Yeah.
Exceptions to every rule except the rule that there are no exceptions.
That's right. Yeah. Right. But
all right, y'all have a good evening.
All right. Sure do appreciate it, Ron. And there's also the thing, another thing that stands out. You take a look. A team like Alabama, a program like Alabama, has margin for error because they do have better talent. They do have outstanding coaches, not to say that other teams don't. But what they have is the ability to overcome a call that doesn't go their way.
Or just a mistake.
Yes.
Any type.
A team like Tennessee that doesn't have much margin for error, a call, whether right or otherwise, can be crippling.
Alabama entered that game as the most penalized team in the SEC.
Yeah, so it's
that
not like
that would not seem to favor them, would it?
Correct.
Just saying.
Yes, but hey, Gerald, we always appreciate it. Thank you so much, and have a great week.
I'll do that. I'll do that.
All right.
Enjoy
it. And we'll talk to you next Monday. Apologies to those that we won't have time to get to your calls, but thank you so much for listening. That's going to do it for today's edition of Sports Talk. And coming up, we invite you at 7:30 to listen to Football Futures with Josh Ward. You've got Big Orange Hotline coming up at 8 o'clock. But up next, it's Tennessee Sports Night on 99.1, The Sports Animal.